we'll go to the answer. So these are just the questions, so there is not much discussion. Verse number 55. So Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prajahati Yada Kaman, Sarvan Partha Manogatan, Atman Yevatmana Tushtah, Stita Prajnyasta Dochyate. Shri Bhagavan, the Lord, Shri Krishna spoke, Uvacha, he spoke. It's in the past tense because it happened long time ago. So what did he say? Yada. Yada means then. So like when. Yada means when. So like when and then. Always these two come together. Like when you wake up in the morning, then you can have cereal. So yada and tada. So yada prajahati kaman. Prajahati means gives up, throws away all desires. Sarvan, kaman, sarvan. All desires, yes. If you want to go to Lord, you have to give up all desires. So that's very difficult. At least one or two desires maybe I can keep. At least coffee I can have in the morning. All desires, that's what he wants. Sarvan kaman, Partha, Arjuna. And where do desires come from? Manogatan, from the mind. Desires arise in the mind and become actions. So one is he gives up all desires. And then the second part, okay, one is I do that. Then what? Then Atmani eva Atmana tushtah. Atmani means in the self, alone, Atmana. Tushta, by himself. So in the self, by the self. So Atmani is the seventh case, Atmana is the third case. So in the self, by the self, Tushtaha. Tushtaha means satisfied. He is totally satisfied. When I say he, please understand, man, when we say man of wisdom, does not mean that women are excluded. It is just a generic way, because obviously man of wisdom is also woman of wisdom. So, Atmani eva Atmana tushtaha. So, he is satisfied in the self, by the self, and sthita prajna tada uchyate. So, such a person, then when he has given up all desires and when he is established in his self firmly and contented, such a person is called a sthita prajna tada uchyate. Uchyate, he is said to be a sthita prajna, a man of wisdom. So, people say all desires is very difficult to give up. That's number one. And number two, people have the idea that if you give up desire, then you become useless. If I don't have desire, then why would I work? Why would I even get up and have breakfast? Why would I go for my job? All the accomplishments, you know, the space and all that, has come out of desires. So you mean if there's no desire, then I'll become useless? So the first point is that desires are the effects of ignorance. When I don't know who I am, then I have a desire and it comes out of incompleteness. Now there are two kinds of desires. One is selfish desire and one is unselfish desire. So we start by giving up selfish desires. I not only work for me, myself and my family, but I work for all. I expand my horizons. I expand my field of work. I'm not only, of course, I'm working for myself. I have to earn and all that. But slowly I start working for society, do things more for others, work for my community, work for my city, work for my nation, work for the whole world. We see in these lives of these great saints and prophets, their teachings were not confined to one section of the community, but are applicable to all of mankind. So from selfish desires, I go to unselfish desires. So slowly I change my desires, where I'm not only thinking of myself, but of others. Even the desire for heaven is also a selfish desire, that even that has to be given up, that by doing very lot of good work I will go to heaven. And even that desire is also counted as a selfish desire, because that is for me. Talking about heaven, there's this story about baseball. I had told that a few years ago, but it's a lot of new people, so I can, if you have heard it before, you can still laugh a second time. But so there were these two friends, Bob and Tom, best friends, and they loved baseball. Oh, day and night, they lived for baseball. They thought baseball, ate baseball, drank baseball, just watched all the games. They knew all the Dodger players, and they knew all the records and all the major league, everything, and every game they would go for. And so when they were getting old, so they said, you know what? Is there going to be baseball in heaven? If there's no baseball, we don't want to go to heaven. They were that convinced. So Bob and Tom, so they decided, they said, whoever dies first should go to, and then come back and tell the other guy if there is baseball in heaven or not. So after a few years, Bob passed away and Tom was still alive. And one day, after a week or two, he hears some sound. He looks, he can't see anybody, but he hears a sound. So he says, Bob, is that you? He says, yeah. So he says, where are you? He says, I was in heaven and I have come back. Because remember, I promised, we made a promise. So he says, is there baseball in heaven? So Bob says, I have good news and I have bad news. So he says, what's the good news? He says, good news is beautiful. Baseball in heaven is unbelievable. There are beautiful stadiums and perfect pitch. And then there is perfect, you know, weather all the time is 72 degrees. The sun is always shining. And you can play with great players like Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle and all the great stars of baseball. They are all playing, all the wonderful pitchers, and you can play with them. Oh, that's good news. So he says, what's the bad news? He says, bad news is, you know, they put a list of players who are going to play this Friday, and your name was on the list. So there is baseball in heaven. Actually, whatever you desire, everything is there in heaven. You want food, there is food. You want pleasures, there is pleasures. But even that is nothing but a magnified pleasure. So even desire for heaven comes out of ignorance. A wise person says, I am fine where I am. If I go to heaven, fine. Because he knows that heaven is not the ultimate goal. You know, some faiths say that you live in heaven forever. But we say that heaven is just a stopping point. After I have done my karmas in this life, if I have done good karmas, I go to heaven. If I have done bad karmas, I go to hell. Actually, today there is a very nice article by Stafford Beatty. He used to come to our classes in the Bakersfield, California, where he has talked about afterlife, very well written article about how there are grades of what he calls as light and shadow worlds. I really enjoyed the article. It's in the main section of the Californian. So this person from selfish actions does unselfish actions. But soon even the desires to do unselfish actions dies out. Because again, as I said, desire is from incompleteness. But when the person works out of completeness, then even the desire that I should serve is not there. There is a spontaneous outpouring of love and compassion and service for all. Because if he has a desire that I wish to serve, and if there's an obstacle, then he will get upset. But he says, my idea is just to do what I can. If people benefit, fine. If not, that is there. So he has no particular motive, no particular goal, no particular desire. He works, see, you and I work for happiness. He works out of happiness. He has so much joy, so much bliss, so much to share, that this spontaneous outpouring of love. And that's how these great Mahatmas, they didn't have a desire. Mirabai didn't say that I'm composing verses so people should benefit. No, I love my Krishna. And so out of love, they just poured out of her. And afterwards, people wrote them down, memorized them. Tukaram, same thing. He was not doing it to become a teacher. His idea was, I love Panduranga and my verses are out of love for God. And then afterwards, people wrote down and benefited from it. So the point is that even the desire to serve goes out and such a person becomes desireless. But as we said, desireless does not mean useless. All it means is there is no disturbance of the mind. He has gone beyond the mind. And for him, mind becomes an instrument which he uses. You and I, the mind is the controlling us, but he controls his mind because desires arise in the mind. And when the mind is under his control, then he chooses what he or she should do, does not let the mind control his thinking. And as we said, these words or these verses are a yardstick which we can use to measure ourselves, that how do I fit in this? If I have desires, what kind of desires do I have? Is my mind under my control, or is my mind controlling me? So that is how we should use this, and this comes out of ignorance. Now in Sanskrit, there is a very beautiful verse called Ahamkar, Ahankar. Aham means I, kar means one that creates. So Ahamkar or Ahankar is that which creates this I. Who is this I? This limited I, this body, mind and intellect, this perceiver, feeler and thinker, this limited I is what Ahankar is. And one has to go beyond that to the real I, which is the divinity, which is one in all. So that is called abiding in my true nature. So such an individual becomes one with the Lord within, and then you can see the Lord functioning through this individual. This person has no doership and no enjoyership. If I say that I am a doer, I did something, then I enjoy the benefits or I suffer the failures. Oh, I did it and nobody appreciated, then I become miserable. Or if somebody comes and says, you know what, you are great, then I get happy. But this person has no doership. He says, I am not doing it. The Lord is working. So the credit all goes to the Lord. I am just an instrument. I am just the pen. The Lord is writing through me. The words are not coming out of my mouth. When all these great teachers, when they gave these scriptures, they said, I am just a mouthpiece of the Lord. Like, you know, that his master's voice, we used to have that in India olden days. They used to make records and they had this gramophone. So that's what he says, I am my master's voice. And they abided in their true nature. So they were constantly in connection with the Lord within. And so their words came from the inner words of wisdom, not from the mind, because their words came from the self. I recently heard a very beautiful story called Club of 99. I'll share it with you. It's a very wonderful story. So there was this king, very rich, very powerful, very successful, but always under stress. The neighboring king might attack me and my ministers are not working and they might be cheating and the people are not paying the taxes. My treasury is going down. So even though he had everything, but he was always stressed and worried and he walked around with a frown, And one day he was walking, going through his kingdom, and he saw this poor farmer, peasant, not even a farmer. He was a laborer working in a farm, torn clothes, beard grown, looking so horrible. And he was laughing and working, singing. So he said, look at this guy. He has no money. He doesn't even have decent clothes to wear. And he's looking happier than I am. So he stops, he tells the, stop the chariot. So he stops, he says, why are you so happy? So first he gets scared, who is the king? But he said, no, don't be afraid. I want to know, why are you happy? So he says, Maharaj, look, I have very simple needs. As long as I get 3 meals and a roof over my head, me and my family, we are happy. 3 meals a day and a roof, that's all I want for my family, and that I can get from working in the field. So why should I complain? So king is very surprised. Look at this guy. He has nothing and he's so happy and I am so miserable. So he talks to his advisor and his prime minister, who was very wise, and he says, you know, why is this guy so happy and I am unhappy? So minister says, because he does not belong to the club of 99. He said, club of 99? What is that? I never heard of it. So I'll tell you what to do. He says, take this bag of, he says, tell the king, he says, get a bag of 99 gold coins. Tie them in a bag and leave it in his doorstep in the afternoon when he's gone to work. King said, give him 99 gold coins? He says, yeah, you want to see what, you know, okay. So king takes his soldiers and they leave a bag of 99 gold coins outside his door. And this guy is at work. And when he comes home, he says, whoa, what is this bag doing? Where did this bag come from? So he takes it inside and he opens it. Oh, it has gold coins. Where did this come from? Who dropped it? So he said, well, it's outside my doorstep. So somebody must have left it. So he counts them. 1, 2, 3, 4. So 99. He said, where's the 100th one? So what happened to the 100th coin? Nobody would leave 99. He said, looks under the table, looks everywhere. Maybe I dropped it. Looks inside the bag, counts 3 times, 4 times, 5 times. Only 99. He said, where's the 100th? He said, maybe I dropped it outside, and outside my door. So he goes out and he's searching. He can't find. He calls his wife. He calls his children. Look under the table. Look under this. Look here. Look outside. They walk around the whole house. By then it gets dark and he can't sleep because where is the 100th coin? He's waiting for the 100th gold coin. In the morning, he wakes everybody up soon as the sun. Come on now, let's look. And they search the whole house. They search the courtyard, up to the gate, everywhere, and up to the road. Where is that 100th gold coin? And now he can't sleep. Now he's all the time worried. You know, what happened to the 100th coin? How can I get the 100th coin? So he says, you know what? Even if the 100th coin is gone, I'll work hard and make it. So he starts working hard. He works overtime. Instead of taking one job, he takes a second job and works twice as much. And he comes home. He's all irritable and he's angry because he, you know, being a laborer, you cannot make money and save enough to earn a gold coin. And he becomes so miserable. And then he tells his wife, you know, you sit home all day, do nothing. You also, you know, do some work at home, do some sewing. The children, you guys after school, you take a job. Why? He wants to make that 100th gold coin. And a few weeks later, the king walks by and sees this guy looking angry and looking all sweaty and mad and a frown. So he asked the minister, he said, what happened to this guy? Minister said, he joined that club of 99. See, you and I are like that. We have so much, but instead of using it to make our life better and to share it with others, we are always looking for that extra thing, that when I get that, then I will be happy. And so we put off our happiness for the future. So they say, so we are not saying that you should not work hard, but what you have, at work hard, do your best. That's what Bhagavan said. Yoga karmasu kaushalam. So do your best, work hard, but at the end of the day, whatever the Lord has given, thank you, Bhagavan. Thank you so much for all you have given. In this country, we are actually spoiled because we have so much. And one day, if the water is not hot and got used up, we get so upset. Oh, how am I going to take a bath? We start yelling at the children. You know, you waste. Other places, people have to walk 5 miles, 10 miles just to get a bucket of water. But we just take things for granted. And so they say, do not be part of the club of 99. Atmanev atmana tushtaha, be content and happy within yourself and then work in the world. So that is called the club of 99. And it says that how does a person manifest his actions in the world? What is this person's behavior? So they say, even in a marriage or even in a relationship or even in a family, do not look at your rights, look at your duties. What am I supposed to do to make this family a harmonious family, to make this home a harmonious home? to make this community a harmonious community. You know, this is differences between young and old, black and white, male and female, Hindu and Muslim. All those are the ones that, and then these are my rights. I must have this. No, forget about your rights. Do your duties. They say, but then do it how? With patience. We said, isn't that going to become weakness when I just keep on doing my duties and I keep on forgiving others and the other person, won't they take advantage of me? No, they say when you can practice patience and forgiveness, it's not weakness, it comes from strength. Only a strong person has patience and forgiveness. A person who is weak will fight back, will try to exert his or her will upon others, because that comes out of insecurity. If I try to impose my will on somebody else, I try to force somebody else to do what I want, that comes out of weakness, comes out of insecurity. A truly strong, if you look at these saints, they were so humble and so modest. They never tried to force their will upon others. They just said, this is my teaching. The Lord is speaking through me. If you wish, you may accept it. If not, and people cursed them, people beat them, people mistreated them. Look at all the Sikh gurus, look at all the saints that were persecuted, you know, by the Muslims and all. They never gave up their faith, but at the same time, they didn't resist. Look at Buddha, look at Jesus. All these great saints were the models of patience, forgiveness, but that came out of tremendous strength, not out of weakness, not out of inability to function, but out of an inner strength. So such a person can function in the world, and the world is called samsara. So it comes from sansarati iti sansaraha, one that is constantly changing, constantly moving. Sansarati iti sansara. So what is a sansara? What is this world? That which is constantly changing. And this person is so established in this wisdom that the world may keep on changing. No, world may do whatever it wants, but he does not lose his patience or forgiveness. So this verse answers the first question, sthita prajnasya ka bhasha. How do we recognize this person? What is his mental attitude with which he functions in the world? So that is an answer to Arjuna's first question.
And I'm just thinking, it is easy to condemn ourselves for doing a lot of hard work all the time in the 99. But if you are not motivated to do any work, how do you get out of that distress?
Yeah, I think we hear a lot about burnout. In fact, one of the medical journals, the cover was burnout among physicians. How people are getting burnt out and quitting, you know, in their 50s, leaving the profession, or getting so stressed out that they are taking drugs and all. And even in social work, people say, I'm so burnt out. You know, I worked so hard and I'm burnt out. If you are not inspired by a higher goal, then burnout will happen. Burnout only happens when you are not inspired. If you are inspired from within and you say, I'm doing God's work. Yes, I'm working for Chevron, or I'm working for whatever, or I'm a physician, or whatever profession I am. Of course, I have to earn, I have to make a living. But wherever I am doing God's work, then there is never a burnout. Then why would you burn out? Because then you get the inner motivation, the inner inspiration. And people, even in social, even in service, they will come and say, I'm burnt out, I'm tired now, I want to take some time off. How can you take time off from service? How can you? If you are truly inspired from within, then you will look forward to every Monday. See, if you don't look forward to Monday, they say you should change your job or change your attitude. And if you look forward to Monday, you should change your wife. But the point is that you should look forward to work. That is the idea. Because I'm here to serve. And when there is the inner motivation, then salary does not become motive, power or position. Yes, if I work, I'll get paid. If I do a good job, I'll be promoted. But that's not my motive. My motive is to do my best wherever I am. I may be a janitor, I may be a sweeper. And same thing in the house. If I'm doing the laundry or if I'm doing the dishes or if I'm vacuuming, it is all God's work. When I do it with that attitude, then no work is a low work, and every work. And so whatever job I have in the community, in my corporation, I do it with that attitude. That A, I'm serving the company, it's not mine, and then ultimately God. Yes.
It's not that easy. Because I've left social work 3 times.
Right.
I've had it, you know, can't do it anymore, and I've come back to social work 3 times.
Right.
And it seems as though I was inspired, I enjoyed what I was doing, but there were people around me that I don't know the words. I just couldn't take it anymore, and I had to get away. And I got away from the whole thing. Tried something else, but I was always called back.
Yes.
You know, same thing, you know, it happened 2 other times, and I'm back in it again.
Yeah, I think, I'm sorry, go
yeah,
ahead.
So, you know, so it's not just an inspiration. The inspiration is there, but sometimes there are outside factors that you can't control. And you have to almost save yourself or your own sanity and get out of it, leave it.
Right. Yeah. When that happens, I always remember the words of Eckhart Tolle in his book, The Power of Now. He says when the situation is, in your case, it was social work, but it could be even a job or it could be a family situation where it is intolerable. The situation is intolerable. I cannot take it anymore. So we have 3 choices. One is to leave. And start, you know, like you said, start again. Other one is to stay in that place and change the situation. But if I'm unable to do either one of them, like I have a job where the boss is really mean and I cannot get another job, I cannot leave, and I cannot change the situation, then you fully accept the situation as it is. And when you do with patience and love and forgiveness, the situation will change. And even if it doesn't, your mental attitude will change. So your mental attitude, yeah, I'll come. Mental attitude will become more peaceful. So you can do 3 things. Either you could have, like you said, left that situation and continued the social service because that goal is clear. Or you could have stayed and tried to change it. And if third was not, both was not possible, then accept it fully. So these are the only 3 ways you can handle an unhappy situation. It could be an unhappy marriage. Could be an unhappy job, or in your case, unhappy social service.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was all for the good, because looking back now, you can kind of see there was something, and I call it synchronicity, that a whole bunch of things had to happen to force me to do something, and I did it.
Right.
And then, you know, and then see where that led. And if I had not done that, where would I be?
Right. So one has to recognize there is a higher power guiding who is wiser than me. And so constantly see the hand of the Lord in. And if your attitude is pure and your motives are pure, then He always is available to help and guide. So yes, no, one can constantly see His hand everywhere. Yes. Everything is happening because of Him, but we think that. And in fact, today's the message for the children is exactly that. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriddeshe janatishtati. Brahmian sarva bhutani yantra rudhani maya. He says the Lord abides in the heart of all, guiding them and moving them like a power in the machine. So everything the Lord is doing. But thank you, that's very good. Did you have a comment, Prakash?
I just wanted to add that just thinking that this situation is not desirous and therefore I should leave this situation and move on to the next one could itself be counterproductive, because often when we are in that situation, then we are not thinking in the right mode of God consciousness. So our decisions could be very impulsive.
Mm-hmm.
But in those moments, if we surrender ourselves to the will of the Lord, then God Himself will guide him to the right
true direction. True. Thank you. Well, that's true. So that's why I said there are 3 options. You know, you could leave, you could stay in there and change it, change the situation with your presence, or you could accept it. And but so either way, I think if you have the inner strength, then, but sometimes we don't know what is guiding us. You know, there is always a higher power working. And I feel that wherever we have been placed for a particular reason. And when things happen, if you see the hand of the Lord working, then, yes.
We're talking about desires. You know, if you think in terms of body, mind, and intellect, you know, desires are, as you said, are emanating from mind. But those desires sustain this life as well, if you think of it way. You know, when the body is born, it's born with some innate desires, like desire for food, desire for safety, and that sustains the life.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's human life or animal life or any other form of life, it's desire is innate into that creation, and that sustains the life. But as we grow up, we develop intellect, right? Animals do to some extent, but humans develop.
Mm-hmm.
We are blessed by God that we have more developed intellect. And we, I guess, intellect plays a role in interacting with the desires, and it somehow twists desires, like desire for food could become, it's important to sustain our body, mind, and intellect if we don't have food. And Lord Buddha, in fact, when he was on the journey of enlightenment, he did try abdicating food.
Mm-hmm.
But then he realized that's not the way to go.
Yes.
So food is essential for our body. But if you eat too much food, we know what the consequences are, right? And that applies to, I think, a lot of other desires too, right?
Right.
But desires, the innate desire is important for among us to sustain this life, the srishti.
Right. Right.
Without desires, there would be no srishti, right?
Right.
There would be no progenation. You know, desire for companionship is the driving force for the next generation to come.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think realization that desires are built by God in this body, mind, and intellect is, I think that realization has to be there.
Right. Yeah, you know, you're 100% right. So we are not saying that you don't do things to sustain the body, because in fact the Upanishad starts with sthire rangehi stushtu vagam sastanubihi vyashema devahitam yadayu. She says, O Lord, whatever life you have given me, let me keep my body healthy. Let my body be healthy, not so that I may enjoy more sense pleasures, but I may do your work. Devahitam yadayu, whatever life I have been given, 40 years, 50 years, 70 years, 80, doesn't matter. But my life should be a life of service. Obviously, you have to take care of your body. You have to eat healthy. You have to nourish your body with good food. You have to nourish your mind with good emotions. You have to nourish your intellect with good ideas, good concepts, reading good books. And obviously, you have to maintain a family. So we are not saying that one should not take care of the family. In fact, the Taittiriya Upanishad starts with that teaching where the teacher, who after having taught the students who have lived with him for 12 years, you know, the student used to go live in the ashram for 12 years. He starts his teaching which says, go out into the world and work hard and be very successful. He tells him, he says, if you are a doctor, you should be the best doctor in town. If you are an engineer, be the best engineer. If you are a housewife, be the best housewife. If you are a mother, be the best mother in town. Then nobody should be better than you. Your house should be the best, the most harmonious, the most peaceful. So he nowhere it says that we are not supposed to work or not supposed to take care of our family. Yeah, if you have that vairagya, which very few people have who become sannyasis, but most of us are householders. And so the house, but the house should not hold us. In the sense, my householder does not mean that I get so held to my house that my whole life is only spent in taking care of my house, my family, my children. So slowly we have to evolve our thinking, because taking care of their body and their family, even animals do, even birds do. take care of their children, take care of their family. So how am I going to justify the human intellect if all I'm going to do is just do the what everybody else is doing? As a human being who I have the intellect and I have the wisdom of the Gita and all the scriptures, I should be thinking more than the average individual. As they say, think outside the box. So my thinking should evolve. Otherwise, obviously you must have desires to maintain your body, but it should go beyond that. So that is the purpose of teaching, is Krishna is taking us to the higher state of evolution. Everybody else is doing that, taking care of their body, going to the gym, eating food, eating healthy. That whole world is doing. There are thousands of magazines and thousands of gyms and thousands of, you know, all this information out there. Everybody, how am I going to be a little better than everybody? Not to better in the sense, not to show off, but how am I going to evolve to a higher state? From human, how am I going to become superhuman? How am I going to become a saint? So this teaching is to go towards that sthita prajna, that man of wisdom. How am I, from an ordinary individual, going to become a man of wisdom? So that is the purpose of this teaching. So that's what Bhagavan is telling us. That do not limit yourself just to your desires.
Also somehow inbuilt, right?
Yes.
And when we recognize our desires that are given to us by Lord, then, and we use that desire to, as you said, to serve God, I think.
Right.
That's probably meaningful, right?
Right. No, creative people are very close to God. Creativity is very close to divinity. A person who can compose music, or a person who can compose poetry, or a person who can come up with new ideas, new inventions. They all are, in fact, great authors, great poets, great scientists are actually very divine people. Einstein in his last years became very, very spiritual. And so creativity can only come when you are close to divinity. Otherwise, you are not able to. So yes, creativity is a desire, but Guruji Swami Tejomayananda says that if you have the desire to compose music, compose bhajans, compose songs in praise of God. If you have the desire to paint, yeah, if you can paint for a living, but if you don't need the money, you're doing it out of joy, then paint nature and say, wow, look at God's glory in this nature. So instead of painting somebody's portrait just to sell it, you know, that you may want to do if you need to make a living. But in your spare time, paint a beautiful thing about nature and let people see God's glory, God's beauty. And so the creativity should become my prayer or my homage to God. Yes, if you feel like painting, you feel like singing, you feel like composing music, that's very good. Nothing wrong with that. But your talents, whatever you have, can be turned in divinity. That's what in one great saint said, guna phirai hain. Guna. So turn your qualities towards him.
Otherwise we get frustrated after something.
Yes, otherwise you get burnt out, absolutely. So whatever my talents are, if you have that ability, do it for service instead of only for myself. So divinize everything. If you have jealousy, rather than becoming jealous of another person's money, you say, I'm jealous. How come this guy can get up and meditate 1 hour and I cannot? I have to meditate 1.5 hours. So transfer your jealousy. If he can do 10 malas, I'll do 15 malas. So you divinize the same qualities, jealousy, and if anger, instead of getting angry with the people, get angry with God. Why are you not coming? I'm going to keep working till I reach you. So you can divinize even those things, anger, greed, jealousy, make them divine. That's called guna phirai, where you can even transfer these negative qualities towards God. Did you have another comment?
A couple.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you let mind lead without leaving behind the intellect, you may not go down the wrong path. Whereas if you always lead with intellect and leave behind mind, you may be doing just machine, you know.
Right.
You may be doing just mechanical.
Right.
So I think that interaction, that balance between mm-hmm. mind and intellect is somewhere, I think that's where I guess balance is there for the life.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. You have to balance the mind and the intellect. Some people may be a little more intellectual than others. Somebody may be mind predominant. Somebody may be intellect predominant. Some people may be service predominant. But all the three have to be developed simultaneously. Yes, somebody may be more into service, going out and digging ditches or building homes, like Homes for Humanity. Somebody else may just sit and cry for God and, you know, sing bhajans. And another person may love to read and teach and all that. But to progress spiritually or in any field, all three are required. Like in basketball, you have to know basketball, you have to love basketball, and then play basketball. So same way, even in spirituality, all three are required. That's what last week I had said, not do all three, take no chances. I told that joke. It was a bad one, but yeah.
The quality of intuition, where does that come in? Does that come into the mind? Is that a quality of the mind?
Together. It's in the mind, but only it happens. Intuition happens when you have the right knowledge. Then it arises in the mind. Yes, intuition is a function of both. The wisdom. Yeah. So thank you very much. Hari Om. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha. Sarve Santu Niramayaha. Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu. Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.